And welcome to the Black House, Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. It is a cold, dreary Saturday afternoon, and you're in the studio today with Eddie and my guest today, Eden Brown. How are you doing?
Hello, hello. I'm good. Thanks for having me.
So it's good. I'm always really excited when I get other Jamaicans on the show. So like,
it's a rare occurrence to come across one in New Zealand.
It's funny. I feel like it's always like the most, and it's always the most random sort of thing. I started talking, "Oh, where are you both from?" I met another guy who was from like the same like parish my grandparents were from, sort of thing.
Goodness.
I was just like, and I kind of just ran. It was very random. Like he was at Newtown Festival, and he was like with one of Joseph Pod's kind of like crew or whatever.
Yeah.
And I started having a chat to him, and then he must have been having a chat with Leah, and then Leah's like, "Oh yeah, it is Jamaican." And I had a chat with him, and he was like, "I was like, yo, where's he from?" He's like, "Yo, my family's from St. Anne's," and I was like, "True, my family's from St. Anne's."
Oh
like,
my gosh, that's so random. Oh my gosh, yeah. I remember hearing when I was working at a supermarket, I just like heard some people speaking in a Jamaican accent, and I was like, this is the first time I've heard this in New Zealand. I was like, hi guys. They're looking at me like, what?
It is such a weird one because I feel like when I get it less here because I kind of can pick it now. But like when I was in Dunedin, like you'd obviously get the cruise ships coming in.
Mm.
And there was that sort of thing. I'd been like, well, I know pretty much all the black people who live in Dunedin at this point.
Especially around
from like the age of probably like 18 through to about 30.
Yeah.
You're on a true cruise ship. And then it was really funny because then I spotted someone and there was like probably a guy my height. And then I was like, went up and had a chat to him and I was like, are you here on a cruise ship? I was like, no, I've just moved here. And it was, have you met Davian?
No, I haven't.
No, he's incredible. He's from the States.
Oh my goodness.
But I was like, he's just moved here. And I was like,
you're like, what are you doing here?
Oh my God, like, stylish black person in Dunedin.
Yes.
Like, staying here now.
I know. The world is changing. Come on now.
But I feel like now, like in Wellington, I can kind of pick. I'm just like, again, that sense of thing. I like roughly know who most people who like, I have a recognition of like, if I don't know exactly who you are, I've probably seen you around.
Exactly. I'm like, I've seen your face before.
And she's like, okay, yep, cruise ship.
Yeah. It's like, why haven't I haven't seen your face in the past few months. You must be on. You must be from a cruise ship.
I think that's interesting, though. I'm always really curious if you're on a cruise like that. Like, is it weird? Because is it weird for people like that who come on from black people who come on cruises? Because then it's just like you come to New Zealand and then all the other black people are like, there's more of us.
No, they must be thinking,
it's
are they okay
quite a
over
weird
here?
Kind of experience.
Like, why are you so excited to see me? I just stepped off the ship.
But no, it's interesting. Like, I feel like I've gone to a couple of like Jamaican community events, and I think they're trying to kind of pull together more of a kind of Caribbean community. But it's really funny. I went to one a couple of weeks ago, and it was primarily Jamaicans, but it was all British Jamaicans, which is great.
Yeah,
so
and
they're all from the Midlands. So they're all from like Birmingham and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's my dad's vibe. That's
true.
My dad's vibe. I saw that. I really wanted to go, but I was away. So I was like,
they're trying to do more events. I think they're probably lining up one for August.
Awesome. Oh, that's exciting.
And I think like for me, like my long-term goal for stuff is I want to try and pull together.
Yeah.
Because I feel like even that just kind of that kind of catch meeting was just like, or that kind of drinks night was just really cool, just in terms of like connecting with people and being like, okay, cool, like we've got builders, we've got caterers and all that.
And
it's like, cool, what can we pull together to then be like, what's the kind of more consistent kind of like Caribbean celebrations or like events, sort of thing? Because like my dream would be like, for like Newtown Festival in Cuba Duba, like pulling together like a proper like Caribbean like
that
mass.
That would be awesome.
Mass
that would
float.
Pop off. That would pop off.
The
people
so
would
hard,
love
like,
it. Yeah.
But I feel like that would be my ideal. And I feel like as proud as I am as a Jamaican, like I feel like the music that's captured me from the Caribbean has been soca music. Like I've just it's probably my, like I love dancehall, I love reggae, but I feel like soca music, there's just something about the energy of it that just kind of picks me up, just carries me away.
You might have to give me some recommendations because I don't listen to it a whole lot. I'm a dancehall girly.
True. I find dancehall is a really interesting one because I feel like I'm kind of stuck where like there's a lot of, obviously there's like that the classic kind of like dancehall from like the 90s to like the mid 2000s sort of thing. And then there's like just like the best rhythms and the best kind of like and that's no, and like the songs that everybody knows. And then obviously then I find it really difficult, like, especially as a DJ, trying to work out like what dance hall of the newer sort of dance hall in the last like 10 years kind of works properly in sets. Yeah. Like, what's your kind of like, what are your kind of like dance hall go-tos?
I love Vibes Cartel.
it's great.
I love Vibes Cartel.
It's like we stand a problematic.
I know. Well, like him, I don't know how much I love him. His music, I love. Mm. His older stuff.
It was really funny. So when I went to Jamaica, I was there when they announced that he was being released from prison.
Oh my goodness!
It was like everyone was like, and that is really funny because like my was there at my uncle's place. And my uncle's like, I feel like Jamaicans are very like punitive when it comes to like prison and justice sort of thing. So he was just like, we killed someone, so you should be shot sort of thing.
And
my other cousin were like, yo, no, you just don't understand. Like,
no. My brother's like, yo, they don't know for sure if they can. And I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this. He's like, they don't know. Like, he didn't do it. And I'm like, I don't know.
And it's that weird sort of balance of like, and I think that's the sort of thing that gets, there's always that kind of air of conspiracy with a lot of Jamaican.
Yeah.
With, especially when you get this, because musicians seem to be like kind of the big, kind of almost cultural shifters. Like, so for example, like with Bob Marley, like you can look at the attempted assassination of Bob Marley.
Yeah.
During like the, I want to say, the 78, 79 sort of thing. And the attempted assassination of Bob Marley was so clearly, like, it was pretty likely that it was the Jamaican Labour Party, a gang funded by the Jamaican Labour Party, which is like the right-wing Jamaican political party, with support from the CIA.
Yeah.
And with Vibes Cartel, it's that same sort of thing. There's like
conspiracy, they out to get him.
Especially because older Vibes Cartel, like probably more so than he kind of then later became, was like probably a lot more politically active and a lot more politically conscious and a lot more politically aware. And I feel like there's that sort of thing where like, because he was just so universally loved, there's that kind of thing of like, we do need to kind of tear someone.
Yeah.
And also, like, I remember talking to like my auntie about it, and she was like, well, he killed someone, he should be in prison. I'm just like, well, if your justice system fucked up, essentially, and there was some messing around with juries, then like, unfortunately, like, that's how justice systems have to work. It's like, if there's a flaw and something has been done improperly, it's like the OJ Simpson thing. It's like, I think OJ did that. OJ clearly did that shit. But it's that sort of thing of like, well, the justice system didn't do its due diligence, messed around with the trial. And therefore, like, he kind of had to be let go.
Yeah, exactly. And I fucked it up wrong.
And that's that sort of thing, like, I find with Vibes Cartel. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm in that same, but I'm not sure.
I know.
But I'm also like, well, he did, like, what, 10 years in prison sort of thing?
Yeah. I mean, he did time, and now they freed him. And now he's making music and doing concerts. Oh, my gosh.
It was crazy. Like, one of my friends went to Afro Nation in Portugal last year, and they were kind of like, they weren't kind of announcing who the last, well, was it 2 years? It would have been 2 years ago, actually. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't announce who the kind of third headliner was. And I was just like, and it was kind of, within 6 months after he was released, I'm just like, it could be Cartel. Like, and it ended up being Chris Brown. But I'm just like,
well, that's another,
that's another story. But I was like, it could be Vibes Cartel, and I'm like, I really hope it, like, because my friend was like, oh, yo, you should come, and I'm just like, well, it'd be really expensive to, like, now to get tickets and get flights and
whatnot and
go to Portugal.
Like, if he's
if they announce it's Vibes Cartel, like, you might be able to come, like, I would probably,
you might catch me over there.
But it's only, like, I feel like, when you listen to Cartel, have you noticed a difference in his music when, like, from before he went to jail and, like, while he was in jail?
I only really listened to the stuff before he was in jail.
True.
I'm, like, I love, like, the old school dance hall stuff. So I'm not too clued up on
I heard someone describe it like when, before jail, like, you can hear every syllable. It's like, man, I care where you're bud from, and it ends where you're drug from. And then after jail, it's like, you can tell he's, like, recording in his cell.
Yeah.
He's trying to make sure the kind of warden, like, the kind of guards aren't noticing.
Oh,
like,
my goodness. He was hustling, though. He was, like, the fact he was still making music in jail, like, He didn't stop.
I love just like the longer it went on, they lost the deniability of being like, oh, he just recorded so much music before.
He's doing this.
He went in 2012 and he is talking about like in like 2018 a song about being on Tinder.
Yeah.
I'm like, this man is making music.
This is new music. This is fresh music, bro, from the cell. Fresh from the cell.
Yes, the Vibes Cartel. Who else? Vibes Cartel.
I love Buju Bantan. Mm-hmm. He's the goat. Not dancehall, but I love Hugh Mandel.
Hugh Mandel, yo.
His album, what is it? Africa Must Be Free by 1983. I think that's the year he has on it.
I might add that to my listen list.
He's really awesome, but he got killed real young, and so many of these Jamaican artists, dude, like they start making music at like 13 and then they're like dead by like 20 or something. It's depressing.
It's really weird seeing how young some of those guys are as well. Like, I remember seeing, I think it was like the Source Awards from like, or like one of the hip hop awards shows from like, yeah, like the late 90s.
Uh-huh.
And there's Busta Rhymes and Buju Banton.
And
Buju Banton is just so young.
Yeah. Like it's crazy.
It's so weird to me.
I feel like, I don't know, I think he's like come out with some new music recently. And like,
yeah.
I keep seeing him. Was it a Colors show
yeah,
he did maybe?
Show, yeah.
And like, I think maybe he did a Tiny Disc as well.
Did you have a disc?
I'm not sure, but I feel like he's been like in the media more now. Like, he's like on his comeback, and I'm like, wait, I love this.
Yeah, he went to prison for a long time as well.
Yeah. Like, wait, what did he do?
I think he might have been coke trafficking in the States.
Okay.
So he went to prison, but it was like...
Okay.
Which is like, but also I feel like it's that kind of one of like, it's always that weird space, and I find it really interesting, especially like with him where it was like, and I kind of think that's probably actually the thing that I think old school dancehall artists do probably, I think would almost definitely do better than current dancehall artists, mm-hmm. is like hit the balance between like, yeah, they can do raunchy, they can do slackness.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I also like Buju Banton, like, is a really good example of like, yeah, but can also just do something like,
yeah,
real nice and uplifting and positive,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
sort of thing.
Exactly.
And I find like that's the kind of like, in a way that I don't really see too many current dancehall artists kind of hitting that sort of same, like, yeah, like it's all slackness and it's, I don't want to say it was, man, I felt old now. It's all slackness. It's all like, it's all gun talk. But I'm just like, no, like I think that's kind of like what I like about Buju Banton.
It's
like,
nice to see them actually just being like people.
Mm.
Like, it's like, okay, yeah, like you're cool, you're bad, but you're good. You're just the guy.
Yeah, and I feel interesting, like, weirdly, because I know, when Skilly Bang blew up, like, everyone was like, he was going to be, like, and I remember Crocodile Teeth was a
crazy, bro.
But, like, I think the artist who actually probably has slightly, not, like, still watching, but I feel like kind of is living up to that kind of, to the potential of, in the same vein as a lot of some of those older artists. I think Haitian.
Yeah.
Like, I just think
he's
in terms
off.
Of... But also, I think in terms of like the, I can't remember the tune he did for On the Hill and Gully Rhythm, but mm-hmm. that was like, oh, like this just feels like it's like, yo, you've managed to do a tune that like, mm-hmm. and the music video of that's really funny because it's a Nine Night, so it's like, so it's like a guy being interviewed, like being like, ah, and it's just him like trying not to cry, like because his pet goat's been killed, and they're holding a Nine Night for his pet goat, but then like. It was
make
those,
a curry goat would have, bro.
Yeah. I find that's always fun. I feel like that's always a fun one of like when it comes to like my fiance is always like, oh, I'm gonna make I'm making a chicken curry tonight. It's like, well, if I'm gonna make something, it's gonna be curry chicken.
Yeah, exactly. I was like trying to explain to my friend, like they're like, what's the difference between goat curry and curry goat? And I was like, in my mind, goat curry is like Indian. Mm. Like an Indian dish, right? And then curry goat's like, do it. I don't know.
Well, also the plantain.
Yes, yes.
I love that's my favorite one.
People be getting hit up about it.
It's one of the ones where, like, all love to Simon and Alicia for who from One Free Little Birds. Mm. But one of the things I kind of was like, I feel like what Wellington needs and what I think culturally I need mm-hmm. for myself is I need like a Jamaican restaurant, like in the classic, like,
yeah.
If there's like half the menus not available,
we're not.
Yeah. He's like, yo, can I get some curry chicken? It don't finish.
Why you want?
I feel like
peak customer service, bro.
I'm just like, yeah, I want a place like that that just has like, because I just think
when you know the food's gonna be good,
and it's like I just think that's something you kind of need. Like it's like here's a cultural experience.
Yeah,
like, this is a great Jamaican cultural experience.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, like I feel like it's one of those ones of like, I feel like I really want to go back. Well, actually, no, the other one was like, so I was staying with my uncle, mm-hmm. and like when the hurricane, the cyclone went through, mm-hmm. like the WhatsApp messages I was getting from him, he was like, and it was just like, just tapping into like Jamaican uncle WhatsApp messages.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
just,
yeah, the most yeah.
Unhinged.
Yeah, it's like what is going on? I remember seeing like on the news, it's like there's a hurricane going through Jamaica. You know, the people on the news are like really like, this is bad. This is, you know, it's real bad. And then I go on Instagram and I see a video of this dude standing on a hill. There's like a freaking like tsunami basically heading towards this man. He's just standing on the hill filming and going, bomba clouds. Like, get off the hill. Go home. He's just having the time of his life. I'm like, go home.
I said, I can't see that. I could, like, my uncle turned off, like, deleted all his WhatsApp messages. So I'm like, I can't go back and listen to it. But, like, he was like, I was like, yo, the big lady, should I reach as of yet?
The big lady.
Should I reach as of yet? but we lost some bananas, some pear tree.
No.
But and the power gone out. But. But we're highly blessed.
Yeah. Okay,
Oh, like my favorite one. Did you ever see the one where there's a Jamaican dude who's gone to Egypt and he's eating a pigeon?
No.
I'll send it to you after the show, but it's incredible because he's like, and his like uncle's like just disgusted at the idea that like, he's eating a pigeon. He's like, you can't foul bird.
Just unserious, bro. Unserious.
And then this guy goes like, well, uncle, like, you're a wannabe, you're a fake bull, you're a bullhead rasta. I think you eat pork all the time.
Bullhead rasta.
And then Mr. Beck is like, the register was, that was a low done dotage that you said. You pass your place.
Oh, I love it.
I enjoy how unserious.
I've been obsessed with Jamaican Spider-Man. I don't know if you've seen him, but he just dresses up in like a Spider-Man suit with the Jamaican flag on it. And he's like, I don't know, he's cool. I don't know if he's saving anyone, but he just does flips around the town. And I love it.
Yeah, I find that like, it was really interesting like when I went, because like I think like obviously Jamaica has its problems and it is mm-hmm. there are aspects of it that you know aren't the safest, but mm-hmm. it's like I found it really interesting because like we stayed with my uncle for like the first time, we were there for about 4 weeks, mm-hmm. the first 3 weeks of the trip, and then we kind of like did like kind of, we went to like, okay, we'll go to a resort for the last week sort mm-hmm. of thing, and it was just like the looks on people's faces when we were like, oh yeah, we've been here 3 weeks, we're just staying out on the island, and it was just like how terrified and it was like. And obviously, in the resort, they've got, like, stores, but it's, like, marked up to fuck.
Yeah.
And there was a grocery store across the road that was literally just, like, there was, like, a little mall complex, mm-hmm. like, a little kind of shopping centre.
People too scared to go there.
And it was just, like, yeah, we just, like, walked out the front gate, went across the road, and it was, like, marked up compared to the rest of the island. But, like, it was, like, cool, we want, like, Ray and Nephew, or, like, we want planting chips, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. We could just go out, and people just looked at us like we were insane that we'd left the resort. And I find like, and that's been...
That's sad.
And that's been kind of the sad thing, I think, has kind of cropped up with Jamaica, is that, like, I think the kind of stat is, like, I think 99 or 95% of Jamaica's beaches are now privately owned and, like, not accessible, like, they're not publicly accessible. And it's one of those ones of, like, even, like, my auntie was, like, when we were going around Montego Bay...
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, yeah, like, or this beach, we used to be able to, like, when because her and my dad kind of got sent back to Jamaica for a few years, I want to say. And then they were like, yeah, this beach, like, used to be, we used to be able to come and hang out here and just chill out here on the beach. And, you know, it's all locked off and it's all privately owned now.
Damn, that's sad for the locals, bro. It's like...
Oh, shit, yeah.
Like, that's your land, that's your country. You, like, can't even... That's your beach. You can't... Yeah.
And I think it's that kind of thing of, like... Yeah, it's that weird sort of space of, like, as much as... Yeah, and I think it's that... But also, I think part of it is also, it's like, the beach is unlocked away, but also then it's, like... It's that kind of bubble, like, that we kind of get. Like, whereas New Zealand, like, I don't know, like, you could probably make some of the similar commentaries about parts of the Pacific, like, Rarotonga and, like, parts of those kind of resort kind of
all
islands.
The resorts, yeah.
Even in kind of Rarotonga, like, I feel like they were like, always encouraging you. I was like, yo, take the bus and go to the Sunday markets, Saturday markets. Like, take the bus and there was always that sort of, like, leave the resort, go to other places. And I think that is, and I felt like a very, I think that maybe is like a more American style, like, I want to go to a place and I just want to kind of like sit
be
in
a
resort,
little bubble, like, get looked after, not have to worry about anything.
Or like Chris Roxon was like, yeah, like you'd be like, you know that bus ride you take from like from the airport to your hotel, and like, and you're just, you know, like, you're seeing like babies selling crack, Shabba Ranch stabbing a dog, Shabba. And then you get to, you know, then you get to the resort and you get a pina colada in your hand and you just kind of forget the worst poverty you've ever seen.
Yeah, exactly.
And I feel like, he's like, Jamaica's nice.
You know what? I kind of like it here.
But like, I feel like, I'd like long term to kind of go back.
Yeah.
But also like one of the things we got driving around was just like how much it was like very clearly usually British Jamaicans or American Jamaicans who had inherited land or bought some land and then just because the cost of materials was so high, it was like you had like half a house.
I've never been before, but I really want to go and visit, but I don't know. I think I would.
So you said your dad's British Jamaican.
Yeah. So he was born in the UK.
Yeah.
But his parents are Jamaican. So
do you know from whereabouts?
I don't know. I don't think he knows. Nobody knows. It's all a mystery.
I find it's weird. It's really interesting. Like, because I've been looking at like my, like, because I feel like they've been trying to get more like Jamaican and people Jamaican descent to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those really weird ones where like my auntie tried doing it and like she can't find like documents for her parents, and it's that sort of thing.
Yeah,
it's that sort of stuff where I think it's like it's an interesting immigrant experience, just that kind of, and like my granddad, like when he left Jamaica, never went back. Like it was just like
My grandma was like she went over there, she went over to the UK with her babies. I think she tried to move back to Jamaica with them, but she just like she couldn't deal with it. I think the poverty was just, it was just too much. It was too hard to live there.
Yeah.
So she moved back to the UK.
And I think like also like, or even just like the weird like the kind of classic one is just like the family the family arguments over like inheritances and that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Like, there's always something, bro. There's always something.
Right, so I think we might just take a quick music break in tune with what we've been talking about. We'll jump on with This Is Driver A from Buju Banton.
I'd like to introduce you to our next song of mine. This one is called Driver from a 2006 album called Too Bad. Let's go. Loud of his mercy. Loud of his. They said, don't stop at all. From this hour is going around our album all. Driver, they said, don't even itch. Now let the little fool in yon come back quick. Driver, just remember the damn speed limit. And if you're running the fence, my friend, that is it. I've got an next telephone, a singular tip. Any problem, you just reach me on this. I bounce them up my when I turn sponsorship. Green like grass, brown like chocolate. Didn't sign you be a summit, several trip. An army line savings, and depend on it, you can't. think of me, but don't you dare burn a spliff. This thing got the marijuana, make sure you hit a blip. Even though it's compressed, I don't need a blend stick. Don't deliver it, I'm going up drastic. I'm gonna run my boss, I'm in the movie casket. Go on, change my roof and put up that grandma stick. Tired, receive a Red Bull, I straight hypnotic. So driver, mister, don't stop at all. Papi's always gonna run around my mall. Driver, mister, don't give a hitch. Can't let that little fool in and come back quick. Driver, just remember the damn speed limit. And if you're running the cops, my friend, that is it. I'm with this man, I'm rubbing the end of my butt now. Because my girl won't give it through the secret doors. Come no long here, so you fit put in pampas. Billy, you're in front of my with federal charge. Emma, don't care nobody on me yard. So much of me love and me no respect, coward. I need a pan of mission, man, hustling hard. Don't get to you to never suffer and starve. Hustling ability, we learn that I had. No senior brain big, no bother draw card. The last boy we tried that dead like. Sell off when you want from me, we set new record. Driver, don't stop at all. From this homies wanna know the Albemarle. Driver, mister, don't give a itch. Call it that little fool day and come back quick. Driver, don't remember the dumb speed limit. If you're running on the cops, my friend, hey, on my external phone, a singular chip. Any problem, you just reach me on this. I put some boy on by, I dump it on a ship. The bank like one, make your turn on, make your twist. FedEx and UPS, I make several trip.
Oi, we are back on the radio with Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM with Eddie and Eden.
Hello, yo.
I was saying just like occasionally when we're talking about like Jamaican sound system kind of culture, and one of the best kind of parts of sound system culture like in Jamaica was obviously like just you'd pull up and there'd be a sound system that was just bass kind of like the crunch of the bass or just like the sound systems embedded in people's cars.
Yeah, it shakes you, bro, and it feels nice. You can feel it inside. You can feel the bass inside.
And it was crazy because then, like, okay, I was saying, so occasionally, like, I'll get like some. I'm at kind of intersection, and just like my apartment's right by an intersection. So then you'll get someone with like big like bass subwoofer.
Yeah,
and then one of the weirdest kind of ones, and it was one of those times where I'm just like. I can't imagine it would be Jamaicans, because I just don't think there's enough of us.
Yeah.
It was like 6 a.m. on like a Saturday morning. And then I hear T.O.K. Chi Chi Man. And I was sitting there being like,
Is that?
Because like, I'm sitting there being like, someone, there's either Jamaicans who know exactly what that song is.
Yeah.
Or it's like more likely non-Jamaicans who probably have no clue what that song is.
Oh my goodness. T.O.K.
But going from other artists to your artistry, I feel like over the years I've been in Wellington, I feel like you've been involved with so many different like little music projects over what's your kind of like musical journey kind of been?
Well, I started singing real young. Like I started getting singing lessons when I was like, I don't know, 8. I really love it, and I just all sorts of genres, all sorts of music. My parents played a lot of music growing up, all sorts of, my mum listened to a lot of like Lauryn Hill and Sade, which I mean is kind of random for a Dutch woman like in her 40s, but you know, she had it going on. And then I started learning bass. In high school. I think moving to Wellington really, I started playing a lot more, I started singing a lot more.
Yeah.
I realized how much I actually love performing, especially in a band.
Yeah.
A few bands I've been in, like it's always with like, not even necessarily people I've known before, but it's a great way to get to know people.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's kind of when I moved down, I was in a band called Crumbly Jack, and we were all still in high school when that started. that was good fun. That we met at like a jazz workshop thing at Vic for high school students. And then now I'm in a band called Yorna. And a few of us have been to jazz school. I went to jazz school at Vic for like a couple months and I dropped out.
You were like,
I was like, yeah, this isn't it. I don't know. Jazz school. Yeah.
It's like I did a music production paper.
Yeah.
My first semester of first year.
Yeah.
And I think I was expecting them to like literally step me through how to use these programs and softwares, and they did not.
Yeah, they threw you in the deep end.
And then I feel like I'm such a tactile learner. Like I need someone to like sit me through and work through this. Yeah. So I was like,
same.
Yeah, I couldn't like go jump on YouTube and like watch something. So I feel like that's all, but also feel like I always find the kind of fun part of those, like the real plus side of like music school stuff is like it's access to practice rooms and stuff.
Yeah,
right?
The practice rooms, and also like getting to know new people as well. You're like, oh wait, like we're all into the same sort of music, all like playing the same sort of music. But yeah, jazz school, I was not a fan. I was out of there in a couple months. I was like, what the? As soon as they started talking theory, I was like, whoa. I just came here to play. Like, why is the piece of paper in front of me? I don't know what any of this means. Yeah.
Yeah, like reading music for me, like I'm just.
Yeah.
It's just that's where music for me gets mathematical, and I hate maths.
Me too. It's like if we're talking numbers, my brain just like shuts down, and
That's why I got into DJing. It was like the right level of like tactile and kind of like I can actually just do this, like it's an intuitive sort of thing, and I don't have to know too much theory.
Theory is like it's confusing, dude. And when people start talking about it, I'm like, what? So it's like a foreign language.
So you're singing, playing bass as well? Or?
We started where it was just the three of us, so I was singing and playing bass, but then we got another bass player in because I was like, I need to just focus on my singing. Like, it's too difficult. I can't multitask that well to play a bass and sing at the same time. It was doing two very, like, different rhythms and different melodies. My buddy Peter is playing bass in Yorna now, and I prefer that.
Yeah.
And he's great. He's amazing. I can just, like, focus on my singing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What sort of vibe, what kind of, like, genre sort of vibe do you kind of going to go with?
I feel like it's a little bit of R&B, indie, soul stuff. It's hard to
kind of quantify it.
A few of the guys went to jazz school, so there's always like a little bit of something jazzy going on. We're opening for Mae Simones, who's a Japanese-American singer and guitarist, on Wednesday night at Meow. So that's, I'm really excited for that because she is awesome. She's real cool. So yeah, that's exciting. That'll be fun.
I think it's always kind of fun being in that sort of being undefined by genre quite well. Something really enjoyable.
Yeah, I don't want to be like, we are a jazz band and we only play jazz. Like, I don't, no.
Well, especially like I feel, and I sort of think it also goes back to like you said, like your like the music your dad was listening to, the music your mum was kind of listening to. Like for me, like I got like my mum was like an old like was a punk, like a punk kid in the UK, so like that was kind of how I got introduced to a lot of punk and that sort of thing, and then I was kind of like into hip hop and then grime kind of searching, and then one of my friends was at uni was kind of really who introduced me to dance hall. And it's just that sort of thing. I just think there's always, and I think that's what I've like about for me for DJing is that like I kind of will just jump between, like I can jump between soca music, house music, and I'm a piano or something like that. Just kind of I can flow from genre to genre to genre.
Exactly. I think it's good as an artist to be able to do that because, like, it's otherwise it's a bit too restricting. You get more opportunities if you can do other genres as well.
So alongside sort of Lauryn Hill and sort of Sade, who else would you kind of be like, who are your big influences?
Stevie Wonder. I love that man. I love Stevie Wonder. His music is just like amazing. He's an amazing songwriter and lyricist. I've been listening to a lot of Kokoroko. Have you heard of them?
Kokoroko, no.
They're from the UK. They're all of like African descent. It's like sort of jazzy with a lot of African vibes in there.
Yeah.
They're real cool. Been listening to them a lot. But yeah, like Stevie Wonder, Erykah Badu.
Yeah.
Big. Yeah. She's a queen. She influenced me a lot with my singing. What else? I can't even think.
I feel like for me it's that kind of one of like, yeah, like I think it's weird, like it's for DJing, it's like I don't really look to that many other sort of DJs in terms of that, but also like, and I think in terms of just like artists, like, or groups and stuff that I love, like Outkast has been one of my favorite groups, but also just like from in terms of like, for me, like I love like Parliament and Funkadelic and like kind of like,
yeah, I love Funkadelic,
and I feel like Outkast is that kind of like, and then with that real cool blend of like southern sort of hip hop and their funk and like weird sort of, and like they were weird kids as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what I've always really grabbed. I've actually, because I interviewed Sean Kuti a few weeks ago.
Oh my gosh, it's
and
awesome.
It was cool because I kind of, it's weird because obviously a lot of people are like, oh, he's fella Kuti's son, like that's how people know him, and I kind of, I had heard about him because he was like collabing with like Janelle Monáe and like Jadena and stuff like that, and I was like, it felt like that was a real cool kind of like, I kind of said, it was like, there's a real cool, like, it feels like the weird alti kids
kind of
got to do the kind of like, in a way that like mainstream hip hop, there's some crossovers with like African artists and stuff like that, but I'm just like, the weird kids was where it felt like they're the ones who are like, let's work with like, let's kind of build these kind of Pan-African music kind of like networks almost. And like, like I, one of my friends saw Janelle Monáe live.
And she was awesome.
Like, and she was like, it was like at a festival and it was muddy, and then Janelle Monáe like jumps off stage and starts like rolling and dancing around in the mud, and
it's
like, and that, that's just quite, that was,
I love her.
And I think like I saw Tierra Whack a few when I was in the States.
Wow.
And that was like a real cool, like just different weird, and then just like I was like, oh, I think I was like, I've always known I'm a weird kid, but I'm just like, yo, I understand this.
Yeah.
I was like, I hadn't even listened to TRL before that, and I was like, okay, cool. No, I'm a convert.
I'm about this. For sure. So I remember, I think it's called Tightrope by Janelle Monáe.
Yeah.
It was like one of the, literally like, I remember singing that as a kid, like in my singing lessons.
Yeah.
Like that was like one of the first songs that I was like about. I was like, yeah.
What's that? Some people talk about you, but they know all about you. Oh, the music video of that was so weird. Like, that's what I love about her was like, just like how.
Was that when she was all in like the strappy stuff?
Yeah, and then like they're all in like, and like just the dancing was just so weird. And like, and then like I remember when was it Dirty Computer came out? Like I remember watching that whole like fucking that whole like hour long kind of movie for
crazy.
And like then I got introduced to like the Wonderland Collective, which was like her, Jadena, and I feel like the kind of others didn't necessarily blow up, but there was like a song on there called, let me just, I'll see if I can find it. I'm pretty sure it was called Let's Get Caught. But it was an EP called The Ethos, and it was like just one of the coolest kind of like 6-track EP.
Yeah.
And just one of like the coolest kind of like weirdest kind of like artists on it. And it was just like, and I just feel like that vibe was so cool. And this, again, I found it interesting because like coming into the Outkast connection, because Big Boy's on Tightrope. But Big Boy, I think, was the kind of person who kind of discovered Janelle Monáe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was another thing that I'm like, and as we like, I saw an interview with Big Boy on Kid Cudi's podcast recently.
And he's like,
what's something people don't know about you? I keep a Pokeball in my pocket wherever I go. And I'm like level 60 on Pokemon Go.
Hell yeah.
But also he was talking about like going through like all Outkast different albums, and he was just like, this one was like, I think it was like AT Aliens and like, or I think it was AT Aliens. He was like, yo, like, this was like when we like, we're going around Europe and we were picking up on like the kind of like rave and like drum and bass scenes and all that sort of stuff. I'm just like, I was like, yo, okay. Like, I like those little influences
coming through. Yeah, it's kind of nice. I feel like you get to know the artists more. Like when you hear them talk about stuff like that, you're like, oh, okay. You're just a weird dude as well.
There's one that I haven't, there's an album that I really want to listen to for the commentary track, which is Future's Dirty Sprite 2. Which I'm fascinated to see.
I haven't listened to it. I mean, or is it coming out? Or
no,
is it
it's been out for like 10 years probably.
Oh, damn,
at this point.
Okay. I haven't listened to it.
But what I find fascinating about it, I'm just like, I'm really curious to know what Future has to say about each of these tracks. I'm just being like,
oh, does he do like a little?
Yeah, it's like it's like the track, and then it's like a little like commentary. But I'm just being like, because that I'm gonna imagine that's just gonna be like Future like leaned out of his head, sort of thing. Just being like, oh yeah, like this is the kind of background for the.
I'm curious as to what he's got to say about his songs as well.
And I find like, there's different. I feel like. I like that kind of just the eclecticness of my music taste.
Yeah.
And I feel like it just gives me really fun different genres and influences to kind of like draw from.
Yeah.
So there's obviously you've got this, what was the artist that you're kind of opening for?
May Simonis.
Mm-hmm. So that's, so Meow, where can people grab tickets and stuff for that?
Oh, I have no idea.
Okay.
I have no idea. Life's been too hectic. I have no idea. I think, I don't know. If you go on her Instagram, search up May Simonis, there'll be a link there.
Yeah.
She's doing I think she's in Australia at the moment. She's doing like an Oz and NZ tour. I'm not a good promoter. I don't know what's happening.
I find it interesting because also like, going back to like obviously she's a Japanese artist. You said you just came back from Japan.
Yeah. My brother lives there. He's been over there for like 5 years now.
Nice.
Yeah.
How was that sort of trip like?
It was great. I love going over there. It's just nice to be surrounded by just some different culture. I don't know. Mm. I get a little bit tired of the of the vibe here in New Zealand. Sorry. But it was just nice to, I mean, it was nice to see him, of course, but it was nice to, like.
It's like you're secondary to,
vacation. Oh, yeah, my brother lives here, too. But, yeah, that was nice. It was so nice and warm there. I went to a J-pop idol show, which was, I do not listen to J-pop or K-pop or any pop, really. So that was a whole weird experience. It was like a girl band. They were popping off. It was kind of crazy. Like, the amount of effort that they put into their performances is wild. Like, they had their outfits on. They were dancing. I was like, I would be out of breath in, like, 2 seconds if I was doing any of this. It's crazy.
Sometimes when you see artists, like, that's what I found with Sheon Kuti. Was like, he was like, just the level of energy he carried throughout an entire show. I was just being like, I mean, you could see, like, the sweat just pouring.
Yeah.
And just like, holy shit, like.
I would not be able to breathe. Like, it's crazy. Like, respect. So.
But also, I find it interesting because, like, for Japan, like, it's interesting because, like, Japan was, like, weirdly, like, a real strong Japan-Jamaica connection.
Yeah.
Because, like, Japan was, like, I mean, when I was at uni, we did, like, it was a lecture, and it was looking at, like, dance hall spaces in Japan.
They love it.
And it was so funny because, like, it was a silly, and it was Spice. It was like a dance hall queen event sort of thing. And it was like, blasted, and it was like Spice with like, and was Somi Like It.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm sitting there being like, and it's just like watching the rest of my classmates being like, I know exactly the song and I know exactly what the song's about. Obviously because it's like a kind of news or kind of report on something, so they've kind of like censored bits of it out being like, it's like, do any of you guys recognize this?
Yeah, y'all hear this right now?
But then, like, I got really into, like, a Japanese kind of, like, crew called Mighty Crown. I think the first non-Jamaican group to win King of the Dance Hall.
Oh, wow.
Which was, like, insane. And, like, yeah. And then, like, I feel like it's, like, and it feels, like, in a way, like, it feels, like, both authentically Japanese, but also, like, authentically Jamaican as yeah. well. It's, like, that kind yeah. of, like, it's very clear, like, a respect for...
Yeah,
culture.
Yeah, for sure. I keep seeing this woman on my Instagram. I can't remember what her name is, but she does dance hall music, but like in Japanese.
Yo.
And it just works so well, and it sounds so fire. I need to find out what her name is. But like, yeah, she's so cool, and you could just tell, like, she just loves the culture. She appreciates the culture and the music. Like, it's awesome. Yeah.
So what were your kind of like, obviously, so your this J-pop concert, what were your other kind of highlights from Japan?
Well, we went to Fuji. We yep. went and saw Mount Fuji. Didn't climb it because I'm not hiking. Like, I'll see it. I'll stand at the bottom and we're good. So
my friends originally were planning to, one of my mates was planning to propose to his boyfriend at the top yeah. of Mount, they were going to do the climb and then propose to Mount Fuji as the sun came up. And then one of them got altitude sickness halfway up.
Oh, no!
So they were like, they made it up. And they kind of knew that the proposal was coming, sort of thing. So they kind of made it up the top, and they were just like, do we feel like doing this now? And they were just like, no, I want to go back
yeah.
down again.
Yeah, I know there's like, so often it's like really cloudy there. So like, thankfully I went there on like a non-cloudy day. But like, yeah, I've also like had some friend. I have had a friend who was... they like went there for like their honeymoon yeah. and it was just like cloudy the whole time and they like didn't get to like see much and I was like, damn, that's sad. But yeah, we went there. There's like a theme park right by Mount Fuji called Fuji Q, which is like a real like thrill seekers adventure park.
Yeah.
Like they've got, I think, two roller coasters there that are like world record roller coasters. One's the steepest one and one's the most intense roller coaster in the world, and I love it, and I always drag my brother along. I try to see him once a year, so I've been there a couple times, but I always drag him along with me, and he's 25, but he's like, you know, I'm too old for this. I'm too old for this. I felt so bad because I dragged him along with me, and at the end of the day he just looked wrecked. But I was having a great time.
That's crazy. I've never actually done a roller coaster.
Yeah, they're not. I mean, yeah, there's only like Rainbow's End here, which is in Auckland. And that's as much as you get.
That was something I didn't realize for a long time, was that Power Rangers filmed. Like, there was a couple of seasons yeah. of Power Rangers filmed in Rainbow's End. Like, it was consistently, like, it was, they filmed in Auckland.
Yeah.
And then it was one of those things where, like, it was always. And then I kind of only clicked quite a few years later. I was like, that's Rainbow's End.
Yeah. Damn. I remember, like, as a kid, I used to do some, like, film, like, extra stuff. I remember we filmed, like, a Power Rangers thing, like, at the zoo.
Yeah.
Like, Auckland Zoo. That was kind of random.
So what kind of, have you, what have your kind of, like, highlights of your kind of, like, extra-ing career?
We did Time Bandits in Wellington with Taika Waititi.
Yeah.
And that, honestly, like, I swear I met, like, every black person in Wellington there. Like, because they were, like, filming a scene that was set in, like, ancient Mali
yeah.
or something. So they literally, like, had to get every black person in Wellington for that scene. So everyone was on set, and it was a loud set that day. It was fire.
So, like, it's really funny because I was going to do some extra for Time Bandits as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Except what happened is that... I kind of did it without really kind of talking to my manager and that sort of thing. So, uh-huh. But then essentially what happened is I was going to, like, for the filming, I was just going to pull a sick day. I was going to pull sick days so I could go to the shoot.
Right.
And then what happened was I costumed out for the Harlem
Renaissance stuff. Yeah, I did that one too. That was awesome.
And then I got genuinely sick. I was really, really annoyed. I was just went through everything, and I was like, and it was like, okay, this is the universe telling me not to lie to my manager.
Yeah.
But I was like,
yeah, I was like, surely you would have been there, because
I said,
they literally had to, they had to get everyone to get everyone together for that set. Yeah, yeah. So that was fun, but I feel like there's not that much happening in Wellington. Not that much film stuff happening.
Yeah, I feel like.
Or New Zealand.
Yeah, like, there's little bits and pieces. Like, my... like there was a film, I think it was shot at University of Otago, a few, like, probably 6, 7 years ago now.
Yeah.
I remember that, so I had a couple of mates who were kind of, like, background characters across the screen and that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, like, I kind of... Yeah, like, I feel like... I remember when The Rings of Power was here, like, I was trying... Like, I feel like I was trying to kind of... Because I really wanted to interview Lenny Henry.
Yeah.
And I was really trying to, like, get the kind of ins there to try and work out where they were shooting and when and that sort of thing, and that never kind of materialized into anything.
Yeah.
And then just, like, I feel like the heyday was obviously Hobbit and Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Where I'm just like, don't know if we would have gotten ahead for the Hobbit.
Nah. Not happening. But yeah, it's been a couple of years since I've done any, like, extra or film things. I think the last thing was for a show, a movie called Wolfman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But that was...
The kind of horror...
Yeah, yeah.
The kind of Hammer film sort of...
Yeah.
Like,
honestly, I can't even remember who was
that. Yeah, because my friend worked on, like, the sets for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember him being like, it wasn't a good film.
Yeah, I don't think it... Yeah, I don't think it popped off very hard.
I think it was because they were trying to revive, like, the old, like, you know, like, the old Frankenstein, old Dracula.
Yeah, that's kind of the vibe I got from it.
They were trying to kind of do a revival of, to my understanding, but then they kind of
just... That's a big job to, if you want to do that.
And also kind of gets into, like, weirdly, and, like, I think werewolf horror is such a weird...
Yeah.
Thing, like, I think you can do, like, I think you obviously, like, Nosferatu a few years ago, like, there's good vampire horror films.
Yeah.
I feel like werewolf horror, I think you almost had to set a werewolf film like 200-300 years into the past.
Yeah.
And you can't get like a modern,
yeah.
A modern werewolf film, I think they just always end up being way too camp.
Yeah, it's something's a little bit off about it. And I love my horror movies, but I prefer horror movies that are like, that are things that could like actually happen.
Mm.
Like, like people being scary.
I feel like that's always a fun horror movie when it's like I feel like the one that really I think really introduced me to that was Pan's Labyrinth, where I'm just like,
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's so good, and it's the sort of thing of like all the kind of fantastical and like the fantasy horror stuff.
Yeah,
is like just nothing compared to like how horrible the actual people are.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like, that's like, such a fun one.
Yeah, exactly.
Or I started watching 28 Years Later.
Yeah.
Like, that was a cool one. I'm probably going to watch The Bone Temple, the second one.
Yeah.
In the next week or two.
I haven't seen the newer one. Is that the, like, most recent one?
Yeah, the most recent one. And that was really cool in terms of, like, again, the kind of the human element to it. It's like, yeah the zombie, the zombies and stuff are, like, still terrifying. But I think they hit the really good balance of, like, the monsters are genuinely terrifying.
Yeah.
But, like, the humans are kind of like, that's where it gets a bit
that's
kind of, like,
exactly.
Nastier and weird.
Yeah.
And
yeah. It's like, ugh.
But no, like, essentially, yeah, like, so do you kind of do any acting stuff aside from the extra sort of stuff?
No, not really. I think, I used to do, like, a little bit as a kid when I lived in Auckland, and then I moved down here, but it's just been... Yeah, I don't know. It's been kind of quiet. Like, I am with an agency, but, like, there's just... There hasn't really
not
been anything happening.
Are you with Noir?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And even in Auckland as well, doesn't sound like...
Not much is happening.
Because I was like, maybe there's more happening in Auckland. I don't know. But it's not really, like, something I'd want to do, like, as a career. It's just kind of fun to...
Yeah,
I feel like...
It's
kind of fun to do, but I'm like, it'd be nice if it was a little bit more frequent.
I had that when I was, like, because I did drama all through school, and I was a relatively decent actor. I was a pretty good voice actor as well.
Yeah.
But then I kind of left high school, and I'd been doing drama with the same group of guys pretty much the whole way through.
Yeah.
And it was in a way where, like, you knew people, you could just bounce off each other, and, like, you had those relationships.
Yeah.